to the garden, he sees through that window. Unimaginable garden, that place to think of me.
Hello and welcome to the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM. Each week, we'll be discussing all things related to downtown Las Vegas, its rebirth, its failures, successes, and the many interesting people working and living in a part of the city that, until very recently, has been mostly forgotten and shunned by residents and tourists alike. I'm Joe Shaneham, a Las Vegas Sun reporter who also writes a regular column in Las Vegas Weekly. You can find me in both publications and online under the heading of Joe Downtown. If you have any ideas for future shows, please send me an email at joe.downtown@lasvegassun.com or my Twitter account at joedowntownlv. As you listen, you may be hearing the tinkling and of silverware or music in the background. That's because we're taping this at the Beat Coffee Shop in the Emergency Arts Building at 6th and Fremont Streets. Though the show is taped, we hope to soon be broadcasting live so we can take calls for comments and questions. Now, I won't always be taking movers and shakers in Las Vegas, but in the case of my first guest, she definitely fits that category. My first guest today is Terry Murphy, whose name might seem common in a country full of Irish descendants, but Murphy, a longtime resident, is a former county chief administrative officer who was instrumental in crafting laws that did two things: preserved and protected the indigenous desert tortoise and opened the door for tremendous growth in Clark County. After 6 years with the county, she left to start her own business, Strategic Solutions, a consulting firm that plays intermediary between businesses and the other entities with local government. Today, Murphy wears many hats. Aside from running her own business, which is based downtown, she is president of the Downtown Las Vegas Alliance, which represents downtown businesses. She is the honorary consul of Ireland for Nevada. She's a mom and a woman about town who can't take two steps downtown without running into someone who knows her. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks. It's nice to have coffee with you here at the Beat.
It is. I'm here every day, so you can stop in anytime. So really briefly, Terry, can you tell me what the Downtown Alliance is and what they're trying to achieve?
Yes. So in around 2006, a group of business people got together and decided that the city was not going to be able to take on the entire redevelopment process on its own, and that businesses really needed to be more involved in assisting the city and working hand in hand. And at the time, this was pre-Zappos, if you will. At the time,
So they actually thought they could get something done without a major investor like Zappos. They thought something was going to happen down here?
Well, at the time, yes, because it was pre-recession. And so there were significant projects really on the books with significant investment in them on Symphony Park. That was the focus of the city at the time. And so we had the World Jewelry Center. We had Charlie Palmer's, who is still in the works.
Endless talk about an arena.
There were lots of projects, and everybody knew Irwin Malasky was actually the leader of the pack at the time, and obviously he's instrumental in everything from Nathan Adelson Hospice to the Convention Center. And his president of his organization, Rich Worthington, became the first president of the Downtown Alliance. So primarily our goal is to work as a catalyst, as a sort of collection point for all businesses to help them interact with the city and to help the revitalization of downtown. We are members now, well, during the recession, we dwindled to maybe 10 or 15 people because people just disappeared. Now we're back up to over 60. And wow. Our members include nonprofits like the Mob Museum and Three Square, large developers and owners like Mark Fine and Downtown Grand, which is set to open in October.
So when you guys have these cigar smoke-filled meetings and you're back there drinking your champagne and whiskey.
Champagne and whiskey.
Yeah.
No smoke.
Do your... do you have any influence? I mean, does what you say or do matter to anybody in elected capacity?
Absolutely. We're very fortunate that our legislators, James Healy, Heidi Swank, Tick Siegerbloom, listened to us during the legislative session and passed AB 50, which allowed the city's redevelopment agency to continue, which was vitally important to businesses downtown. We also are participating in Commissioner Chris G's Maryland Parkway Corridor Study through the RTC. We have participants on that. And we are very vocal about issues that are important to downtown businesses. One of the most important things we're going to be working on, well, two things are very important to us. One is downtown safety. We want a business environment and a cultural environment where people can feel safe to come down, have dinner or a drink before a show at the Smith Center, and then come back down and enjoy everything that's going on down here. So safety is our number one priority right now. But next to that, we have a large program that we're working on. We want to create business improvement districts, maybe one, maybe many. And what those are...
Let me pause here for a second. What's a business improvement district? And what is it? What's the good of... I anticipate that it means whoever's within that district is going to pay more taxes.
Correct.
Which people hate in the state.
I will give you an example of one that exists. On Las Vegas Boulevard, from Sahara down to Russell Road, there's really cool landscaping in the middle of the road. Well, that is paid for by the property owners along that stretch of road, and it's paid for in terms of how much frontage they have. The process whereby that occurs is the business owners themselves get together and agree to pay additional revenue to the county in order to enhance the external environment.
So if I know there's a business improvement district here down on Fremont East.
Correct.
Let's say you got one over on Main Street where the Velveteen Rabbit, I know where the bars are,
mm-hmm.
The Velveteen Rabbit is, but what improvements, how do you envision that extra money would improve things? What would it do?
It can be anything from as simple as trash cans and people to empty them to a massive organization. For example, if anyone's really interested, they can Google the Lower Manhattan Downtown Alliance. They have not only enhanced public safety, downtown circulator, bus and transportation. They have massive events, much like the Downtown Project is doing, but this would be more encompassing of the entire downtown. And so we're just starting the process. We're actually going, several of us are going to New York for the International Downtown Association Conference, where downtown leaders from across the globe will be able to share their ideas with us, and business improvement district leaders from around the country will be helping us to decide how we want to do it, what we want to do, and what components we want to have in it. Obviously, it's got to be an incredibly inclusive process because the business owners have to buy in or it doesn't happen. So if they don't want it, it won't happen.
Okay. I'm talking with Terry Murphy. She's the president of the Downtown Las Vegas Alliance, private business owner of a consultancy. And interestingly enough, the Irish Council for Nevada, the honorary Irish Council. So you talked about, actually, maybe the theme of today's show is safety, because later on we're going to have some guests talking about police interactions downtown. But so let me just touch on that for a bit. How far do you think, how much leeway do you want to give to police downtown to create a safe environment? I mean, is there a limit to what should be done? What can be done? What do you want? What would you like to see happen? I know there's going to be a curfew on youngsters drinking, but what else do you think has to be done and why?
Well, if I were queen for a day, yeah. I would just make everybody want not to hurt anybody else. But that's not the case. And we have people who are, you know, unfortunately committing criminal acts. We don't want that to happen. Now,
there was one shooting in Fremont Street experience.
And two stabbings.
Now, the people downtown see a distinction between that part, which is the more traditional tourist area, and Fremont East, which is more local-oriented. That stuff hasn't happened here. They say it's happened over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, continue. I'm just to...
Okay. What we have is, I think, a very good problem. But a byproduct of that is, unfortunately, some of the enforcement of late has been aggressive, probably because the actions have been aggressive, but the people who are victims of that aggression are, you know, not... It's unfortunate that's happened. What we have is sort of a convergence of what everybody has wanted to happen for a long time, which is tremendous growth in the businesses along East Fremont. And we have a convergence of the tourist community, which are spilling over onto East Fremont. And we have locals who are going under the canopy and enjoying. So more people are coming downtown. I think as things open further on Fremont East, further down when the container park opens, and the crowds are dispersed even further, I think you might see less of that. Those actions that occur because too many people are in one place at one time. But in terms of law enforcement, I know only enough to get myself in trouble by talking too much about it.
Okay, so we won't make you talk about that. But I do know you know a lot about liquor laws because you speak on behalf of the Fremont Street Experience and the Downtown Las Vegas Alliance in regard to a move recently to get some more package liquors, as they call them here in Vegas, but just essentially liquor stores on the Fremont Street Experience, where there are already six. They want four more. To people, you would probably say too many. There's already too many. Four more isn't going to make things better. But how does alcohol, some people say it doesn't matter. You know, it's not
going
to.
Yeah, serving liquor by the drink. When you go to a bar, you buy one drink. Now, the bars and taverns here actually do have the ability to sell you a case of beer or whatever you, or a bottle of vodka or whatever you want, but they choose not to. When you buy a drink, you're served by a bartender who has a TAM card, who works for a guy who has a non-restricted gaming license. He's going to protect that license. And when you get too tipsy, for the most part, and obviously you're dealing with human beings, so it won't happen all the time, but for the most part, you won't be overserved at a bar. When you're buying packaged goods, you go in and they're selling the high-octane 24-ounce cans, 2 for $5, stuff that you are intending to get absolutely hammered very quickly. We've done research for entertainment districts across the country. You can't buy packaged liquor on Bourbon Street. So we're comparing ourselves to other places where tourists are invited to come down.
But you can one drink. Block off the street.
Yes, but not right on the street. And right. That's what we're saying. On Fremont Street, under the canopy, there are two blocks which are completely covered with two hotels. So you've got literally six liquor stores, three on one block, three on another. I don't think you can show me any other place in the world that has six liquor stores on two blocks, let alone 10.
So if I can find such a place, do I get like $100 or something from you?
I will buy you a bottle of whiskey.
Awesome. I'll be doing a search.
Not on Fremont Street.
Awesome. We've been talking to Terry Murphy, president of the Downtown Las Vegas Alliance, business owner, and the honorary Irish Council for Nevada. She knows a lot about Las Vegas, and we're going to wrap it up now because we're going to be talking a little bit more about police, how they deal with the growing crowds of people here on East Fremont, and a local lawyer who has his own opinions on those matters. Thanks a lot, Terry. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Hi, and welcome. This is the second half of the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM. For our second half, we're having Justin Graham, a local businessman who is laying the groundwork to open his own recording label here, followed by David Figler, a local attorney. First, we'll start with Graham, who had an interesting, if disturbing, interaction with Las Vegas police Friday night. Justin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'd heard about your interaction and talked to you, and I've written a column about it, which appeared last week in Las Vegas Weekly. Could you just, in your own words, tell me what happened between 8 and 9 p.m. Friday night down here?
Yes, definitely. So me and a friend of mine, Cliff, we were walking back from a bar further down Fremont. We got to about 6th and Fremont, paused for the light, started walking, and as we got across, the light started flashing.
But you were walking when it said walk.
We were walking when it said walk, okay. Definitely.
Go ahead.
As we got across, we walked past the beat, and there was cops lined up in the little parking area, and they stopped Cliff and asked him to put his hands on the hood of the car because they needed to search him. At that time, another policeman approached me, and basically I just took off my bag, opened it, laid it on top of the hood of the car because I kind of knew what was coming next. They took our IDs, they searched us, went through our bags, and said that we weren't allowed to walk when the light starts flashing to count down.
So if you hadn't been able to walk when the light starts flashing, in other words, you would have had to stand still in the middle of the road. You wouldn't have been able to cross or turn around and go back.
Yeah, so basically he was saying that you're only allowed to walk while the white hand is up, not while it's counting down from 12 to 1 or 10 to 1 or whatever it is.
And I should mention here, I have spoken with the Metro Captain for the Downtown Area Command. He wanted to be here, but he actually has a meeting at this very time discussing preparation for the Life is Beautiful Festival this October, so he couldn't make it. But I did speak with him for the column. So you said when it occurred, you kind of knew what was coming. Why? What do you mean by that?
Prior to that day, I've been stopped by Vegas Metro before.
Down here?
Downtown. That was actually a Sunday night. No one on the street. No cars out whatsoever. I crossed from... That was on 7th and Carson. I crossed to the other side and then once again across... Again, in front of Eat. So basically, I was at the tattoo shop and basically ended up in front of Eat, which they stopped me then, said I was jaywalking. I asked them where was the cars, and there's not even a car parked. So what am I waiting for when there's no one around? He said, well, they still can hit you. But there is no one on the street to get hit by, so I didn't really get it. So I kind of knew what was coming.
Were you ticketed?
I was not ticketed either time. It was just a hassle for the night.
So what do you wear, like bright, shiny lights? Why do you think you're attracting attention from police?
Well, I can assume only but a few things. But I'll leave that for other people to answer. What I will say is I know that they're trying to keep the streets a little safer, but I believe they're targeting the wrong people to keep it safe. The people who are here on a regular basis, which if they're here on a regular basis, they should get to know their faces and names. I think if they employ cops that are from the area that know the local people, we wouldn't have these issues. I'm here on Fremont Street every day, every night. I see all these cops. I know their faces. Why don't they know who I am?
Yeah, I think you sort of would stick out here too, because I'm looking around the coffee shop right now, and you're the only black guy here.
Yes, I would. I'll definitely say that I would stand out in most crowds, especially in downtown at the moment.
But do you think that contributed to why you were stopped?
It influenced why I was stopped.
All right.
I don't know for sure if it was definitely that, but I would definitely say it probably influenced the decision to stop me and Cliff, which were the only two black people walking down the street, than stopping someone else that was doing something more illegal.
A couple more questions. You didn't file any kind of complaint or report with Metro about these incidents? How come?
No, I didn't. Because it's just not worth the time. I don't feel like it's going to fix anything, to be quite honest with you. I think they're going to do it whether we complain or not.
Let me just point out, I sought Justin and Cliff out. They didn't seek me out to talk about this. They're not looking for headlines or anything like that. And these are pretty small incidents, but they do affect perceptions. And in that regard, I want to talk now with David Figler, a local attorney who's lived downtown for well over a decade. He was raised here, and he knows a lot about how downtown has changed. He's at the forefront. He's quite outspoken about policing issues. He often represents people in the area who come up against what he often finds as a sort of heavy-handedness by the police department. Welcome, David.
Hi, Joe.
You were here listening to Justin's story, and I know you can't really give advice or anything like that, but how do you find it? Is it atypical for what you've heard? And give me an idea of what you do and some of your clientele.
Well, as a criminal defense attorney, we get all sorts of criminal charges. Most of the ones that occur downtown are of the misdemeanor variety. So the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony, I think, is probably obvious to most people. It's just the degree of seriousness. So felonies are those where a person could potentially be sentenced to a term in prison, whereas misdemeanors usually result with either a citation of a fine or a at worst time in the city jail. So it's a little less serious. But for years, and you know, I was a Las Vegas Municipal Court judge for a term as well. Most of the stuff that we're seeing downtown, it involves the vast majority, at least up until probably in the last year or so, just involved people who were homeless or borderline homeless or people who had other issues, mental illness, drug addiction, things like that. And that was, I would say, of all the citations issued in the downtown vicinity and in the city, most of the citations which are issued are in the downtown vicinity. That's what we were seeing more than anything else. I think now we're getting just sort of ordinary citizens coming in, wondering why they're being targeted or singled out, and we're having to deal with these issues. The open container law enforcement, or the attempt to enforce it, has created a whole new group of clients, people who have never been in trouble before, who are under the impression, as many people are, that drinking alcohol on the streets of Las Vegas is perfectly legal, and arguably it is. And so there are some tensions, some definite differences that are occurring now that there's this sort of newfound energy once again on downtown. I mean, you know, it's cyclical. Downtown has come back many times in different ways, but this one seems to be the most far-reaching and widespread, and maybe even potentially long-lasting if everybody gets their way.
Now, these incidents are good for your business, but I know you're a concerned downtown resident too, and it probably bothers you. But let me play the part of the police department for a second here, because I've spoken with them about this. And again, I did ask Metro to be on here today with me, and Captain Anderson had a meeting at this very time to discuss the Life is Beautiful Festival, which is going to attract 70,000 people over 2 days into the same area.
if their wildest expectations are made. But sure, there's going to be an influx of people into an area that doesn't otherwise handle that level of foot traffic, that's for sure.
So Metro is dealing with something unprecedented here. In a way, they're going to be having the downtown container park is going to open. They have the downtown Grand is going to bring 800 new employees here within 2 months. And Zappos next week is bringing 1,500 new employees. Plus, you have the new businesses that are growing on the East Fremont area. There's an influx of people to this once moribund, you know, a crack alley, if you want to put it that way, that they've never really, they haven't had in 20, maybe 30 years. So they're trying to figure out what to do. They're trying to prevent, what happened on the Fremont Street Experience months in June, which was a shooting. Nobody was seriously hurt, but a shooting did occur. If that occurs here, business owners don't want that level of violence here. They imagine what it would do to the business in an area that a lot of Las Vegans still think is sketchy. How do you respond to something like that as from your viewpoint?
Well, you know, the Fremont Street Experience is in of itself its own creature, and they've kind of created a newly claustrophobic, contained zone, and they have to deal with the issues that are there. I mean, it's a public-private enterprise, more or less. But they're used to large-scale events. I mean, they do New Year's Eve down there where they pack everyone in like sardines. And the police presence is there to, you know, avoid the stuff that comes out of that. So, you know, they have a mindset of how to deal with that space. I don't know what the disconnect is as far as why that has not held up. I have a real hard time going through the Fremont Street Experience now, and I've been going to Fremont Street literally since I was 4 years old.
A hard time in what? What do you mean?
It's almost like a gauntlet to walk through. The crowds are so dense, and with the erection of the Slotzilla, it's even more dense, more claustrophobic. So you've got the canopy, you've got the Slotzilla, you've got the casinos sort of encroaching out into the walkway. You've got all these people. You've got all these people just staying around the quote-unquote characters. My girlfriend and I used to, we don't so much anymore, but we used to walk down Fremont Street playing a game we call Character or Character. You know, and Fremont Street's always been populated with characters, but now it's just these sort of people essentially begging for money, which is, you know, First Amendment protected, but some of them are taken to some really bizarre extremes. And they draw crowds, and so you've got, instead of a flow of people, you've got people just sort of standing still in this pedestrian way that's already starting to get claustrophobic and more claustrophobic. I mean, it would not be uncommon for us to, you know, have some dinner down here on Fremont and then want to walk down to the Golden Gate or walk down to the plaza or go get frozen yogurt over at Binion's or any of, you know, the amenities that Fremont Street has to offer people out on a date. But now we just stick to this side because that side has gotten a little uncomfortable. And now with the, you know, the recent experiences that are occurring late at night, I mean, the video is pretty frightening. That
it's very graphic.
You see, it's very graphic. Yes. And you do see the shooting, and it makes you wonder how you would protect yourself if you were just walking through that. And the answer is you can't. And there's really not a police presence that, you know, look, your original question was, as the police, don't you have an interest in keeping, you know, everything safe? And you absolutely do. But, you know, you got to figure out what devices you're going to use to be most effective. And randomly stopping good citizens who aren't otherwise committing crimes is not having the desired impact. In fact, it's having the opposite impact. It's keeping this really bad viewpoint of who the police are and what they're supposed to be there for, as opposed to your friend, which most people like to think of the police as their friend. They become a combatant or not necessarily an enemy, but a challenge to enjoying yourself while you're down in the area spending your money. Look, you could put metal detectors everywhere. You could randomly stop and frisk everybody who wants to step foot on the Fremont Street Experience. You could ban people from the Fremont Street Experience and you would stop crime. You know, there's a lot of extremes that they could do. The question is, how far do they go in the name of safety and giving up, you know, people's right to enjoy themselves? That's what it always comes down to.
And the video, by the way, he was referring to was one released by Metro a few weeks ago regarding a shooting in June. And I think your point is well taken. I think what's happening in a way is that they're trying to figure out what to do. They tried blocking off Fremont East because the First Friday crowds were getting so large. They talked about putting a fence up around this area and checking IDs as people came in.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously for every action they take, there's going to be a reaction, there's going to be a consequence, and the question is it something everyone can live with? So, you know, that's where it comes down. But, you know, with this open container law, and we could talk about that for a half hour alone, you know, the prosecutors are saying it's not against the law. Metro's saying it's absolutely against the law. And so what's being left in lurch are citizens. The cases are being thrown out of the municipal court, and yet Metro is still out here citing people. That's a question that needs to be put to Metro, is that why is there that disconnect? And who's suffering in the meanwhile are citizens who had no idea that they were violating the law because, frankly, arguably, they aren't.
Well, there you have it, a little slice of downtown Las Vegas this week. This is the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM. We're here at the Beat Coffee Shop at 6th and Fremont. I hope you come in next Wednesday morning. We'll be taping again. Eventually, we will be live, so we will be able to take your calls and comments. Thank you. You said that.